Hello, everyone, and welcome to the teleseminar today on 5 Tools for Coping with Difficulty. This is your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I'm so delighted that you've taken the time to join in today and listen on this call. I feel very honored that you are here today and that you're giving up an hour of your time to join me and listen to this information that I'd like to share with you today. The ultimate purpose for this call is to introduce you to an upcoming workshop I'm going to be teaching titled The 7 Lessons Wisdom Path, and we will be discussing that workshop later at the end of the call, and I'll be explaining to you how it will work, what it will consist of, and I want to give you lots of information about it so that you'll be able to decide whether or not that workshop might be a good fit for you. It's extremely important for me that you know in advance what to expect from the workshop so that you can make a good decision about whether or not the timing is right for you or the fit is good for you. So I will be filling you in on that, but prior to that time, I have this talk to share with you on 5 tools for coping with difficult times, and This talk leads perfectly into the 7 Lessons Wisdom Path, so that's why I've combined them together. Before we get started, I'll tell you a little bit about myself for those of you who are not familiar with me or with my work. Again, I'm Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I am a family practice physician who spent many years of my medical career working in hospice with patients who were at the end of life. And I really got started in hospice because of a tragedy that occurred in my own life fairly young in my medical career. My father, at that time, died from suicide. He took his own life. And that event was so devastating for me. It really plunged me into my own crisis of grief and guilt, where I spent many, many years trying to recover and trying to find my way out of the darkness of that grief. Ultimately, it led me to work in hospice, and it was during those years I worked with hospice that I did find my way toward healing from my own grief. And not only that, I found that I was completely transformed within, and my life path was transformed through the lessons that I learned from working with patients who are at the very end of life. And I can tell you, for me, it was such a profound experience and such beautiful wisdom that I learned at the bedside of these patients that it not only changed everything about me, it inspired me to want to share those same lessons with others, including you. And I have really spent the last years of my career, and particularly the last 4 years since I retired from medical practice, on a mission to share this information through my writing and now through some teaching and speaking that I'm doing. And so I'm delighted that you're here and very honored that you're here today to listen to this presentation, because you are giving me the opportunity to share the profound message that I learned from those patients who were dying. And as I can tell you, those patients are not here with us anymore to share their own wisdom with you. And so I really view myself as the messenger. I was given their stories and given these lessons to pass on to other people. And that's what I'm dedicated to, and that's why I'm here today, to pass on this information and this wisdom that so transformed my own life. So one more time, thank you very much for tuning in and giving me the honor of your time and attention for this hour. Today we're starting our conversation by talking about 5 tools for getting through difficult times. This subject is very important to me because as a medical doctor and in hospice, I find that my involvement with patients almost always comes at difficult times in life. So generally, if someone is coming to a doctor, they're coming because something isn't going well or working right in their life. And I found through my practice that much of my time was spent helping people figure out how to negotiate these difficulties and crises that occur in everyday life. And I realized that's an extremely important role to play for people. And one of the problems in our society is that our society actually tells us that we shouldn't have difficulties. Our society creates this image of life as being a bit of a fairy tale, as for that life for other people is always happy and joyful and bright. And our society doesn't really support us or prepare us for experiencing difficulties. And that's why sometimes it can be such a devastating blow to us when suddenly something goes wrong and we haven't really learned how to cope with it or been prepared for it. So, as I said, as a medical doctor, I found myself many times, even though my stated job as a doctor was to diagnose illness and provide treatments and prescribe medications, I actually found myself on the emotional and spiritual level with patients, actually helping them figure out how to get through what they were experiencing in their life. And so that actually became the skill that I cherished the most and that I found the most helpful as I worked with people. Far more helpful than prescribing a drug was the ability to talk them through and maybe teach them some practices and some tools that they could use to cope when life wasn't going well. And so I don't know if this describes you at all right now. If you are someone who yourself might be going through some difficulties, you might be facing financial problems. It's right after the holidays when I am doing this call, and so I know for many people there's been an issue of overspending during the holidays and now trying to figure out how to cope with it. It's the start of a new year, so we're all trying to get ourselves organized and get ourselves on track with our resolutions and creating new budgets for ourselves and new expectations, but we might be finding ourselves in a bit of trouble and having some difficulty getting there. Some of us may have suffered a loss of our jobs, and certainly we've dealt with a lot of that in our society this past decade with a great deal of unemployment, so some of us are still dealing with that type of loss. We may have lost a loved one. We may be suffering a breakup of a relationship. It's possible that we've experienced some sort of a failure or a disappointment in a project that we've been working on, something that just didn't go well and didn't turn out the way we were hoping for. We might also be coping with our own illness or injury and having to deal with a certain loss of functioning in life or a change in our ability to function. And we might be dealing with a loved one's illness or injury as well and be a caregiver who has been asked to step up and provide care for that person. And it's possible, too, that some of us might just be feeling tired and a little bit fed up and disillusioned with the direction life has taken. And we might also be feeling that we're at some sort of a dead end, that things are just not moving forward anymore. We're stuck and things are not going in the direction we would like to see. So all of those are just descriptions of situations we might find ourselves in, times when we might look around us and feel, wow, I am in the middle of that tunnel, that dark tunnel, and I cannot see the proverbial light at the end. I'm just in the middle of the darkness. That particular time when we find ourselves surrounded by darkness is a time, it's a very rich time in life for us actually. It's a time that can actually bring a great deal of growth, but a time when we really need our coping skills to help us get through. And so that's why I'm going to offer you a few tools, and I want to describe some of the stages that we go through as we're coping with crisis, and then offer you a few tools at each stage to help you better negotiate these difficult times in life, whether you're experiencing it now or whether you realistically understand that you could experience something like this in the future. I think you'll find these are very simple tools. They're actually nothing new or earth-shattering, but it's applying those tools and understanding how they work in a certain way that is important information for you to have right now as you're looking at coping with difficulties. So I wanted to start by describing to you that there are really three stages of recovery from any crisis. And this correlates somewhat, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross described five stages of grief, and these three stages are just a little bit of a simplified version of what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was talking about. And I really divide them into the stages as a physical stage, mental, emotional stage, and then a spiritual stage. So those three in general. And we'll go through each stage and talk a little bit about what occurs at each stage. So the first stage is the stage of survival. It's really the survival stage when we are simply trying to hold on and to get through each day after some sort of devastating loss has occurred. And I can describe this to you. After my father's death, after I learned that news, I really went into a state of shock for quite a while when I felt as if I was completely numb and somewhat dissociated from my own life. I was going through the motions of things that needed to be done, but not really connecting, not really connecting my feelings with my actions, and not really all there in many ways. But I was able to carry out the tasks that I needed to do in order to survive. And so this survival stage of grief is it's a stage of shock, and it correlates as well with Kubler-Ross's stage of denial somewhat, a stage when we cannot quite believe that this devastation or crisis has actually happened. Some part of us cannot fully grasp what has occurred in our lives. And so that's what sets us a bit at odds with ourselves. We're struggling to even grasp with our minds that a crisis has taken place, that it's real, it really happened, and we somehow have to deal with it and have to figure out how to get through it. So that is this initial survival stage when we're really just going into a very basic level of survival mode. And some of the most important things we can do are simply just making sure we get enough to eat and that we drink water every day, that we get sleep at night. And one of the tools that I recommend to people who are at this stage is to use walking on a daily basis during these difficult times when you're still feeling disconnected. Walking is sometimes one of the best physical activities that you can use during this time. So, granted, nothing earth-shattering here, just go for a walk, but I recommend to my patients when they're in the midst of a crisis to try to walk for at least 15 minutes a day, because walking connects you with the earth and grounds you a bit. It's ideal if you can walk outside, but if you live somewhere where it's not safe to be outside or the weather doesn't allow for it, you can walk indoors. You can go to a shopping mall or even to some sort of a building with a long hallway where you could walk back and forth if you have to. But ideally, outdoors is even better. But try to focus on getting 15 minutes of a walk every day, and during that walk, use that walk to connect with your body and simply focus on one step at a time and feel yourself taking each step one after the other. Feel your feet touching the floor or the ground as you walk, and feel your body going through the motions of walking. And that can be very therapeutic for you and a way to begin to connect again a bit with your physical body, and not to mention just the benefits of some sort of exercise and movement that can be helpful emotionally to help us ventilate a little bit of our stress. And it's good for us physically as well to get some exercise, and it's possible we could experience some endorphin release from the exercise also, which is a neurochemical that can help us feel more well-being and more at peace during this time. So that's the first tool I'm giving you, simply walking 15 minutes a day. And you might be a person who already exercises regularly, already has your own exercise routine, so walking for 15 minutes might sound silly. And for you, make sure you keep up the exercise you normally do. But if you feel too overwhelmed to actually work out in the way you're used to in the past, set as your minimum standard that 15-minute walk every day, every single day. The other aspect of that is adhering to a regular discipline every day is also really helpful for you to feel grounded and to feel some structure in your life at a time when everything else has been shattered around you. And when all the other structures of life and all the other stabilities of life that you've been able to count on in the past are falling apart, counting on your walk every day, your 15-minute walk, brings back just a little bit of structure, and it becomes a little anchor that you can hold on to as something that's always there for you. So that's the number one tool that I recommend utilizing during that first stage of recovering from a crisis. And that stage can last anywhere from a couple of weeks to even, you know, I've seen some people stay in that stage of shock and denial for months at a time. And so for each of us, it may be a different experience. It depends on the type of loss that we have encountered. And for each of us, it's our own unique path that we're on through this type of suffering. And so there's no judgment, there's no right or wrong way to do it. But that initial survival stage will last as long as it needs to. And it's as if you are going into a cocoon in a way. I sometimes like to think of it as being wrapped in the arms of angels and surrounded by their wings and somewhat shielded and protected from the outer world a little bit during this time. And it's a very important time for self-nurturing and rest and a bit of emergency recovery to take place during this survival stage. So allow yourself to stay in that stage as long as possible, as long as necessary, and that stage will fade on its own. And I remember one of my patients whose husband had died came to me and said, a year after her husband's death, she said, you know, the pain of that loss is so much worse now than it was right after it happened. Why? I thought a year later it would be better instead of being worse. Well, the reason is because while she was in that survival mode, she was somewhat protected from the depth of her pain, of grief. So you will know you're out of that mode, you know you're out of stage one, when suddenly the pain becomes more intense and you're able to feel your own emotions more. And that's really what stage two consists of. It's a stage at the emotional and mental level of our existence when our emotions become the things that we must deal with during this stage. And I have labeled this the searching stage. While stage one was the survival stage, I call this the searching stage, and you'll understand why as I further explain it. But this stage correlates with Kubler-Ross's stages of anger and bargaining. So this stage, it represents a time when we feel the pain. The pain comes to us. We can't stop it or prevent it. We're no longer being protected from it in the way we were during that early survival stage. And it leads us to begin to look for answers to the pain. We look outside of ourselves initially, trying to figure out how to get rid of this pain that we're feeling, what can we do about it, and also trying to find answers for our questions. Our questions like, why did this happen? Who is to blame for this happening? What's the reason this happened, and how can I explain it? So those are the questions that go through our minds and really drive us crazy as we analyze and think about this crisis that has taken place. And we want more than anything to understand it and explain it. We're desperately seeking a rational reason why this occurred in our lives. And we tend to look outside of ourselves for that reason. Either we're looking for someone else to blame for it. We might be looking around trying to figure out how did these events come about and whose fault is it? What did someone else do? Who made a mistake? Who did something wrong? Who caused this? Who created this? And that's one of the ways we find comfort in some ways, is searching outside of ourselves for someone else to blame and some place to place this pain that we're feeling, this intense pain that is overwhelming to us, really needs a place to go during this searching stage. And so we may take it out on others, and that's where anger comes in. We may lash out at others and blame others for the event that has happened. We sometimes use what Kubler-Ross called bargaining during this stage, because we're hoping that there's a way out of it. We're looking for some sort of easy answer, an easy way to escape from the pain. And we can be very vulnerable during times like this to people who lack integrity, who may be out to scam us or sell us something. Because we're searching so desperately for an answer to our pain and discomfort, we're open to all sorts of magical solutions that can be offered to us by others. So one of the things we have to be really careful about during this stage, we're vulnerable to marketers and people who understand psychology well. And I will tell you for sure, make no mistake about this, marketers are studying you and your pain. And they are studying you and how you behave when you are going through difficult times, because that's when you're most likely to buy something impulsively, and something that you may not necessarily need, but you may feel confused about it and not know for sure if it's the right thing for you. So this is a time of great vulnerability when you can be led into purchasing prescription medications, for one thing. Drug companies use marketing to encourage us to think that we could be happy. We could be running on the beach, laughing, and with a gorgeous partner at our side and enjoying life to the fullest if only we would take the drug that this company makes. And maybe it's an antidepressant, maybe it's a vitamin supplement, maybe it's a pain medication, a laxative that they're trying to advertise to us, telling us if we were to take this pill, we would find the solution to the pain that we're in. We would experience the happiness that we're looking for. We would get relief from the discomfort that's occurring in our life right now. And we're so vulnerable because we so desperately want to be there. We so desperately want to be free of our discomfort that we will fall for stories like this, especially during these times when we're in the midst of this searching stage two after a crisis. So I want you to be aware of that fact, that you are vulnerable, and there are people out there who will take advantage of you when you are at a time of weakness. They know how to spot your weakness, and they know how to talk you into buying what they have to sell. And there are people in all aspects of life. It's not just prescription drugs. They're trying to sell you material goods, maybe a new car or a beauty product, maybe even a program or even a workshop. That's another reason why I want to carefully explain to you my workshop and who it's intended for, so that you can make a choice for yourself that's clear in your own mind, whether or not you are really ready for the workshop that I'm intending to teach over the next couple of months. So it is important that you be really careful and not get sucked in or scammed by people who want to sell you bright promises and magical solutions to things and quick and easy answers to things, because it is the hallmark of our suffering that it is not easy to overcome, and it's not necessarily quick, and it involves work. And so that's the truth that many marketers don't want to tell you about, but that's reality. If you want to recover from difficulties and if you want to move your life forward, you will have to work at it. And you will have to face your suffering head on and go through it. And it's not necessarily easy, and it won't necessarily be quick. So that's the reality that has to be accepted. But while you're in the midst of this stage two searching stage, that information is something you might be resistant to or be denying for yourself. It's so tempting and appealing to go for a quick fix, to grab onto something that we think has a quick, easy answer for us. We may have to do that multiple times before we awaken and realize that nothing is going to come to us. No answers are going to come to us easily and readily. So we might have to try numerous things and be disappointed many times before we come to this understanding that it's just not that easy. And we may listen to the promises of many different people that may tempt us to go in different directions, and we might get disappointed and let down numerous times during this stage two of our coping, the searching stage. So the real problem with this stage is that we're actually searching outside of ourselves for answers. We're looking for a solution that comes to us from outside of ourselves. And that's the reason that all of those solutions ultimately will fail us, because our answers lie within us. It's really the work that we do internally that will lead us to the change we need to make. It doesn't come from outside of us. No other person can provide it. No can tell us where we need to go, can take us where we need to go. We have to discover that for ourselves. And so what I'm offering for you here, I'm not really offering you the guidance or creating the path for you to follow. I'm simply offering you some tools that you might use to help you find your own path. And so the second tool that I want to tell you about when you're at this searching stage, which is a long and can be a very up and down and uncomfortable stage to go through after a difficulty, one of the tools that you will need to use that I recommend during this stage is deep breathing. And again, this isn't anything earth-shattering. I'm sure you've heard it recommended many times before to utilize deep breathing and that it has many benefits. But the essence of getting through stage two, the searching stage after a crisis, is to slow down and take your time going through it. Our tendency, our human nature, is to want to rush through it, to want to get it over with as quickly as possible and rush through the pain and bring it to an end. But what we actually need to do is the opposite. We need to slow down and take our time. And the reason I recommend deep breathing is that it helps us slow ourselves down a bit. And so what I recommend is that you take 3 deep breaths at a time and do that 5 times a day, and that you build it in as a regular practice. Just like you walk for 15 minutes every day and that becomes a practice that you develop and adhere to every day, you also begin to utilize deep breathing. And five times a day you might choose when you first wake up in the morning, before each meal, and before you go to bed at night as your five times that you're going to focus. It takes only seconds or a minute at a time to actually do your three deep breaths. And what I'm recommending is you concentrate first on breathing in for five counts and then breathing out for five counts. And you do that three times. As you get used to the deep breathing, you can probably extend the count so you can go to six counts, eight counts, even up to 10 counts per inhalation and exhalation. Because the longer that you prolong, especially the exhalation, breathing out, the more relaxed you become. Breathing out helps trigger your parasympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for the relaxation response in your body. And that's one of the reasons deep breathing can be so helpful to you, because when you're in the middle of this crisis and you're searching for answers and trying to find your way through it, you tend to be on alert much of the time and be secreting lots of adrenaline that causes your heart rate to speed up, your breathing to become more shallow, causes you to be on edge all the time and even hyper alert. And taking deep breaths creates the opposite reaction by triggering the parasympathetic nervous system. It causes your heart rate to slow down, brings your blood pressure down. It helps you feel a sense of calmness and relaxation. And that's exactly what you need in order to slow yourself down a little bit and think a little bit more clearly about the steps you're taking and the decisions you're making during this time of crisis. So deep breathing is extremely helpful. It's such a simple thing. We all breathe all the time anyway. It's just bringing your attention to your breath five different times during the day. And simply for three breaths, you can make a huge difference for yourself in how you feel. And once you get used to the idea of deep breathing, you might actually really like the effect it has, and you'll find it's a tool you can use anytime. If you're in a situation and you find yourself getting ready to blow up at someone, if you feel anger rising, simply take a deep breath and let it out very slowly. That could actually help calm that emotion down very quickly. So deep breathing becomes a tool you have at your disposal to use whenever you need it to help you get calmer, to help you think more clearly, and to help you just slow down. And so I might even say, if you're looking at purchasing something, someone's out there pushing you and saying, you need to buy this. This is what you need right now. This will fix everything. This will make things better. Stop and take some deep breaths, because slowing down and not letting your mind jump to a conclusion or grasp a hold of someone else's promise will give you just enough opportunity to really think clearly and really listen to your own intuition and decide, is this the right thing for me? Is this the right path? Is this really what I need? And the truth is, while it's our human nature to want to speed through a difficult time, to want to get it over with as quickly as possible, it's not really how things work. And part of our lesson here on this planet, one of the things we need to learn is how to be patient and allow things to unfold in their own timing. Now, I mentioned marketers before, people who are trying to sell you things, who often use time as one of their manipulative tools to get you to buy things by telling you this: there's only five left. If you don't decide right now, it will be gone. This deal is only good today. If you don't take it right now, you'll miss out. You'll have to pay more tomorrow. They try to use scarcity of time to force you into making decisions that may not be the best for you, especially during these times when you're experiencing some confusion after a crisis and not totally clear on how you need to proceed. So it's so important that you have in your mind the idea that I need to slow down, I need to slow down. And whenever someone is pushing you and using time to force you to go in a certain direction or to get you there faster, stop yourself and ask, could this really be the right thing? And the truth is, whatever you need to heal will be available to you when you need it. It will be there for you at the right time. There is no real scarcity. There's no real scarcity of wisdom and of love and compassion and of growth and support for you. There really isn't scarcity. It's really not going to disappear tomorrow if you don't buy something today. And so I want to put that idea in your mind so that you can hold on to that and no longer be susceptible to people who want to use that idea of time scarcity and fear of missing out on something to manipulate you. I want to make you more resilient against that kind of psychological manipulation that others might be using toward you. So do keep in mind that when you have a need, whatever you need can and will be there for you at any time. It's not going to disappear. If there's something that you need, you don't have to jump on it immediately today. If the timing isn't right, it will be there for you. It will be there for you when you do need it. And so in light of this, a third tool that I will recommend to you that you use during this stage is journaling. And I recommend journaling all the time to everyone in any situation. It's one of my favorite tools for anyone to use. Part of that is probably because I enjoy writing myself and I find it very therapeutic. But journaling can be extremely valuable to you when you're in the midst of this crisis and feeling somewhat confused. You might start write down some of the questions that you have, some of the things you're seeking answers to. What is it that puzzles you and confuses you so that you can look at it and read it with your own eyes? And that helps you kind of understand where you are. And if you find that you're full of lots of different questions and lots of confusion, you'll know this is a very vulnerable time for you. Not a good time for you to be rushing off and buying new things or making major decisions in your life. It's a time when you need to sit tight a little bit and wait for some clarity to come to you. Wait for some of that confusion to clear. Your journal is a great place to ventilate the emotions that you're feeling at this time also. And I mentioned before, anger is a common emotion that we experience during this searching stage, and Kubler-Ross pointed that out as even one of the major stages that we all go through after we suffer a crisis or a loss. So your journal is a great place to ventilate your anger. You can just write all of those angry feelings out, write letters, write stories, write whatever you need to write, poetry, to take out your anger and put it on paper. When you have this sort of outlet for those emotions, you're less likely to take it out on other people. It's less likely to surprise you and come popping out when you're in an interaction with another person. If you allow yourself every day an outlet for those emotions that are building up inside of you, it might be anger. You might be feeling disappointment or frustration. You might be feeling just sorrow and terrible sadness. But all of those are things that you can write about in your journal, and it takes the pressure off when you ventilate those emotions. It's very safe to write it in your journal because hopefully it's a private place where you're expressing what you need to say that other people won't be reading, and they won't be experiencing the venom of your anger, and they won't be hurt by it. So your journal can become almost your best friend and your confidant, the place where you share anything and everything that you need to get out and that you need to put down. Another value of journaling is that it allows you to track your own progress. And I've found this, I've been keeping a journal for years, but sometimes sometimes when I start thinking, oh my gosh, I haven't gone anywhere. I haven't made any progress whatsoever in my life. I can go back and read my journals from a few years ago and suddenly I realize, wow, that's how I used to think. That's how things used to be. And I suddenly remember, oh yeah, I can suddenly measure my own progress and say, oh yeah, I'm way better off now than I was then. Like, I was really mixed up about that back then, but I get it now. I can see that so clearly. And so over time, the longer you keep a journal and have it available to you as a resource, the more useful it becomes for you as just a tool for tracking your own progress and seeing it and then even congratulating yourself on, look, I used to be just obsessed with this issue. I wrote about it all the time in the past, and suddenly it's not an issue for me anymore. I figured that out, and I've moved beyond it. Isn't that fantastic? So that's a second benefit that I've received from journaling, and I think it has a lot to offer. And I advise just get the simplest notebook you can find. I buy these composition books on sale for $1 each and I write in those because I feel totally free. I don't worry that I'm spoiling lovely pages. They don't have any artwork on them. It's just simply lined pages in a composition book that I can write in freely and not feel like I have to make every entry be some masterpiece or look beautiful. I can write and scribble and draw and cross things out and all sorts of things. So I advise make it as simple as you can, and just keep that notebook at your bedside so that it's handy before you go to bed at night. So journaling is the third tool that I wanted to mention. Once again, simple, not earth-shattering, nothing you haven't heard before, but it's especially important when you're going through a difficult time to have it as an outlet. And along with journaling, the fourth tool that I'll give you, which is especially effective during this searching stage, is using a gratitude practice. And I'm sure you've heard of plenty about that also, but gratitude ties in well with your journal because you can use your journal while you're using it to ventilate at certain times during the day. You can use your journal also as a place to record something every day that you're grateful for. You can keep it in the same journal, some people have a separate gratitude journal. Sometimes that's a smaller little notebook where every day they record some one thing that they feel grateful for that day. The idea is that while you're feeling somewhat lost in the midst of some pain and suffering during this searching stage, there are still things happening in your life every day that are positive and that are good. But sometimes you're not able to see them. You find yourself overwhelmed with the negativity and all of the emotion going on so that you don't recognize the positive things that are happening. So you have to dedicate at least a moment every day to finding something good and something positive in that day. It works really well, I find, to do it before you go to bed at night because you can think back on the events of the day. And sometimes even when it's been the worst day ever, there's one good thing, like you saw the sunset and it was incredible. The colors were so beautiful. Or you saw someone help an elderly woman put her packages in her car. Or maybe you simply noticed a new flower that had just opened and bloomed in the garden. It might be the tiniest, smallest thing, but what's important is that knowing each day that before you go to bed at night you have to think of something positive makes you more likely during the day to become aware of those things that are happening because your attention has become focused somewhat on something positive for which you are grateful. So it helps to change your attitude a little bit throughout the day when you know that before you go to bed, You have to come up with one good thing, one thing that for which you feel grateful that day. So again, super simple practice, very easy to carry out. But I recommend that you even commit to yourself that it's one of the practices that you'd like to carry out. Journaling at other times to ventilate your emotions, and then one moment before you go to sleep at night for gratitude. And slowly over time, ending your day with a moment of gratitude will also sometimes change the way you wake up the next morning, because you go to sleep with a thought of something good and positive that happened. You tend to wake up a little bit more refreshed and feeling more positive the next day. So that's the value that gratitude can bring you as a tool and a practice that you should utilize. We should be utilizing it all the time, anytime, but it's especially helpful when you're in this stage two of recovery after a crisis, the searching stage. So I will move on to stage three, and I'm going to tell you what stage three is, which is the stage of surrender. And stage three comes after stage two, but only after you have exhausted all of your attempts during stage two to find solutions outside of yourself. Stage three of surrender sometimes comes when you are feeling ready to give up, when you're feeling like there really is no answer, there really is not a way out of this, I can't get through it, I can't get over it, and I'm tired of looking, I'm tired of trying things, I've done it all, and I'm done. And while that sounds very hopeless, that's the attitude that comes just at the moment when you're ready to surrender and give up your searching, give up your resistance to change happening. That's actually the moment when you are ready for transformation to come. And as frightening as it sounds frightening to reach the end of your rope, but, the bottom of the barrel, or to be in the depths of your own despair. But ironically, when you finally give up struggling against this pain that has come into your life and finally surrender to it and just accept it and say, okay, this is where I am. This is what has happened. This is what I have to deal with and accept. That becomes the moment when transformation can occur. And I can tell you in my own story, it took me years and years of searching before I reached that place of surrender. And so you can't force the surrender to come. It comes on its own. You can't decide that you're going to surrender or accept something if you haven't really exhausted your searching yet. And so it's important to allow your search to unfold however it does and take as long as it requires, and you will reach the point of surrender when you're ready for it. But I want to identify it for you so that if you are there and at that moment of surrender, it might seem to you like, now I'm really in trouble. Now I'm really in trouble because I'm not even trying to fight this anymore. I'm giving up. And what I want to do is give you some hope that at that point of surrender, when you're at the point of acceptance and saying, I'm just not going to fight this anymore, That is the moment when you are ready to break through. That is the moment that occurs just before a breakthrough happens. So I want you to not be fearful of that moment, because sometimes we feel it coming to us. We feel ourselves approaching the point of surrender and giving up, and it's frightening to us. And we push away. We push ourselves away from it. We're scared to go there and afraid of it, but I want to give you some reassurance and give you a bit of hope that when we do surrender, that is when transformation is finally possible. So at this stage, and it's really my fifth practice, my fifth tool that I want to give you is really something that works well when you're reaching the end of the searching stage and when you're feeling yourself giving up. And what really happens as you reach the end of searching is that you finally realize there is nothing outside of you that is going to fix you. Nothing outside of you is going to take your pain away or make this better for you. Your solution lies within you, inside of you. And there's a heart-based practice of compassion that is the fifth tool I want to share with you. And it emphasizes this idea that what you need to do in order to enter acceptance and to transform is to go within yourself. You need to go inside, stop looking outside, and go inside of you to find your healing. And so this heart-based practice is also something very, very simple. It's something created by the Heart Math Institute, if you've heard of it. You simply place one hand over your heart. It's, for most of us, it's easiest to use our right hand on the left side of our chest over the heart and hold your hand there. You can even place both of your hands there if you would like. And do your deep breathing practice this way with your hand over your heart. And as you take a deep breath in, you envision a bright light that is coming in into you. It's entering to you through your forehead between your two eyes. And you envision this bright light of the sun, this radiant, beautiful, sparkling light that is coming into you through your head and moving down through you to your heart. The light it's coming through your head and it's moving down through your neck into your chest and surrounding your heart. So while you're taking deep breaths, each time you breathe in, you envision this light coming into you and surrounding your heart so that your heart is just illuminated and sparkling and bright with the light that has come into you. And as you breathe out, you envision that light spreading from your heart. And first you envision it spreading throughout your own body. You just envision the light going, traveling from your heart wherever it needs to go within your body. And you, if you're experiencing a physical difficulty or physical pain, you can envision that light going to that area where you have pain. Maybe it's your lower back or your abdomen. You envision the light traveling from your heart to the area of pain, and you envision the light bringing warmth and healing and beauty to the area where you're experiencing pain. And with each breath, then you bring the light in as you breathe in, and you spread the light wherever it needs to go throughout your body as you breathe out. Over time, as you develop that practice, you can actually use it to start spreading that light to other people. Once you feel that you're filled with your own light and feel radiant within you and feel healed enough, it's a beautiful practice that you can use when you're around someone else who's hurting. You can breathe in light and allow that light to radiate from you, from your heart to them when they're suffering. And you can bring great comfort to other people just by utilizing this practice. So in these stages, we're using it just for you, to help you bring healing within yourself. And this is a simple tool to reinforce for you the idea that your healing is inside of you. Your solutions and your answers, your progress, your purpose, those are within you. They are not to be found outside of you. So stage three, as I mentioned, is this stage of surrender. And there is this moment when you're done searching and you're ready to surrender, and you're hovering in between and trying to get there. That is the moment when you are ready for the seven lessons wisdom path that I have to offer you to teach you. And I needed to go through these stages and explain it in order to bring you to this point, because the seven lessons wisdom path has the wisdom and knowledge that you need to help you get to the place of surrender. You have to be already at the end of searching, though, before you're ready for surrender. And there's a tiny moment of balance in between those two. And this teaching that I have to bring you, the seven lessons, can be very valuable if you are someone who's never really had a spiritual awareness in your life or a spiritual practice before. What is needed at this moment to help you actually fully get to surrender is some sort of a spiritual framework for life and what's happening in life. And the seven lessons provide this framework. If you already have your own framework from the past, you may not need the teaching that comes with the seven lessons, because you may be able to get to that place of surrender and acceptance all by yourself. What I found is that these seven lessons create a framework, and it's kind of a map, I guess I would say, that helps guide you toward surrender and acceptance if you're in need of that kind of support along the way. And so I'll briefly describe for you, as we're getting to the end of this call, what the seven lessons wisdom path that I'm going to be teaching, what it consists of. It's actually seven different modules, and each module is one of the lessons from the book, What Really Matters. There are seven lessons in the book. So each module contains one of the lessons, and these are the lessons I learned from the patients I dealt with at the end of life. And so we'll spend an hour in a call similar to this once a week for 7 weeks on each one of these lessons. And each lesson I will go through and describe to you the lesson, what you need to learn and how to approach that lesson. Also, I'll be giving you additional practices and tools that you can use and some homework for each lesson. So every week there will be some things for you to work on after the class ends, prior to the next week's class. Each one of those calls will be recorded, so if you can't listen to the call at the time of the broadcast, you can listen to it any time during the week that works for you. So it's to make it ultimately convenient for you, so you can listen in whenever you have time, and also use it to get your homework done for the week before the next week's call. So the first module, we look at suffering, and the title of this module is Learning to Embrace Our Difficulties, and we'll talk about why suffering is necessary and what we can learn from our suffering. In the second module, we talk about love as the second lesson, and the lesson behind love is really that we must let love break our hearts. And so we will talk about what true love really is and how it differs from the version of love that's being offered to us through our advertising, and why we have to let our hearts be broken by love, and how we can enhance love in our lives. The third module is on forgiveness, and it focuses on releasing resentment. And so we're going to come face to face with the baggage we're clinging to from the past. We're going to look at the nitty-gritty work of forgiveness, the real hard stuff that we have to go through. And the truth is, if we want to be people who are capable of love and who give and receive love in life, we have to learn how to forgive, because there is no love without forgiveness. So that's why these two modules come back to back and they're very closely tied together. The fourth module is titled Finding Heaven on Earth. In this module, we start to learn how to live in the present moment and understand why nothing actually exists outside of this present moment. And how do we stay within the present moment? How do we live in modern society where we have to set goals for ourselves and make plans and schedule meetings and yet exist in the present moment? So there will be some tools and practices we'll be talking about in that module. The fifth module is finding purpose in every moment. And we're going to look at our notions of what purpose really means. For our lives, purpose and achievement, those are two things that are quite frequently talked about these days but often misunderstood. So we're going to look more deeply about what really is the purpose of life and how can we rewrite our own scripts about meaning in life and why we should stop striving to attain success in life. So that's module five. In module six, we'll be talking about letting go, and this, again, is surrender. So the previous five lessons were all building us up to this point where we're ready to really dive into the idea of surrender and what it means for our spiritual growth to let go and to simply be with whatever our circumstance is at the time. And through these practices, we will learn how to let go of our attachments. We'll learn how to find joy in our losses. And the last module is on facing fear, which is the ultimate benefit we gain from doing this work. The ultimate benefit we gain from facing our suffering and going through our difficulties and learning how to surrender is that we actually diminish fear in our lives. And so the last module, we're going to really look into our own fear of death and face up to that, because death is our ultimate fear in life, and learn how we can negotiate and how we can manage to get through our day-to-day lives in spite of knowing in every moment that we are mortal and that we will die at some point. And how do we live a life that's full and celebrated and joyful even while we carry with us this knowledge that our lives are brief and fleeting and we will lose them at some point? So that is the final module. The entire class will be followed up. I didn't call it a module, but there will be a kind of a closing call after all of the modules have been completed, where we'll have some question and answer time and kind of a closing resolution to say goodbye to the work that we've done and hopefully to tie up any of the loose ends that are there. So there will be one final session, but that won't be as much of a teaching call as it is just a resolution and a farewell call for us to say goodbye to the work that we've been doing. So that describes in all the eight calls that you will have. Seven of them will be actual working modules where there will be homework. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to my website, which is karenwyattmd.com/wisdom. And as you received information for this call, there should be a link to this web page there. That's the page where you can sign up to receive mailings, and you can also, if you want to go ahead and register for the course and sign up for it, you can do so from that page. There will be a link on the page that you can go pay for the course also. And so as part of the course, you'll receive not only these calls, you'll receive recordings of the calls that you can keep and download on your computer so you can re-listen to them at any time. You'll receive some worksheets every week that go with each call that have assignments for you, your homework assignments, and some things you can work on, some journaling prompts, and some of the takeaway points from that lesson, so you can keep those sheets and have those with you also. And in addition, there's also, if you sign up for this, you can also receive a 30-minute free consultation with me, one-on-one. If you're interested, and sometimes at the end of the course or even in the middle of it, sometimes questions come up for people or confusion about things that they'd like to talk about privately, one-on-one, and you will have the opportunity to arrange a private phone call with me for that 30-minute consultation at any time during the course or after the course if you would like that. So that's another benefit from signing up for the course. The cost for this entire course for you on this call is $97, and there will be a place where you can pay by credit card or PayPal on the website so that you, if you'd like to sign up for it. And so it includes the things I mentioned up above. I want to reiterate what I was saying earlier, that if you are still in the searching stage, or you're looking outside of you for answers, this might not be a course that you're ready for yet. So I want you to keep that in mind. This course will be here. It will still be available for purchase even after these 8 weeks of calls are done with. You'll be able to purchase recordings down the road. And it might not be time for you if you still feel like you're dealing with your emotions, you still have anger you need to get out, you may not be ready yet to go through this course. This course is really for people right at the end of the search. That's who I've made it for and who I'm targeting for it. So I don't want to be giving you any false pretenses. I think you'll have better success and get more out of the course if you wait until you're at that point when you're really, really ready for it. So that's what I hope for you, that you'll be able to analyze that and evaluate it. And there's no pressure here. There's no special deal that's going away in one day. You'll be able to sign up. You can sign up later at any time. Even after the entire course is over, you can access all the recordings and the handouts if you wait until you're ready. So I do want to emphasize, it's the most important thing for you is to know and feel within you that this is the right thing for you to do. And I'm fully supportive, as I said before, of allowing time for your own healing to unfold. And you will know when it's the right time for you. You will know when you're being led in this direction and when it's the place you need to go. So this webpage, KarenWyattMD.com/wisdom, is a page you can return to at any time. And on that same page is where you'll be able to purchase this workshop to listen to on your own at any time in the future, if right now is not the right time for you to do it. So don't worry about that. It will be here for you whenever you need it. So that being said, if you have more questions about the workshop, please check out the page I mentioned, KarenWyattMD.com/wisdom, and hopefully some of your questions will be answered there. I will be sending you a replay of this call in an email, so that you can listen to it again if you'd like to, or perhaps you didn't listen to it the first time, but you can download the replay and listen additional times. And if you have questions, feel free to connect with me on my website. There's a contact me form that you can fill out and ask me questions. So feel free to email me through that form and ask questions if you'd like more information about the course. And In the meantime, I want to thank you so much for listening to this call and for sticking with me through the entire talk. We've gone a little bit over time. I'm so grateful to you for being here and tuning in and really being willing to make yourself vulnerable by listening to this kind of information and really thinking and talking about your own suffering and your own difficulties. And I'd like to remind you, for one thing, there is a handout of the 5 tools that I suggested. If you're listening to this through the website, instantteleseminar.com, you can access the handout on the page where you're listening to the replay. But also, when in the email you've received, there should also be a link to the handout. So I wanted to remind you those 5 tools and how to carry those out are available in that handout. In the meantime, I want to wish you well. I hope whatever kind of difficulties are facing you right now, you find your own path through those difficulties and find your way to a peaceful heart and are able to look within and learn the lessons that you need to learn in order to move on and move into your own life purpose and find what is awaiting you on the other side. If you feel I'd be a good partner for you on this journey, I would love to work with you and share with you what I've learned. And meanwhile, I send you much love and many prayers and blessings for you as you continue on in your journey. Thank you and take care.